This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation. Mystery Hour with James O'Brien.
Oh, 3 minutes after 12. And for once, it's not a sort of welcome light relief that's on the agenda or on the horizon, because we haven't been wading through coronavirus-related catastrophe for the duration this morning. We've been enjoying the warm glow of last night's result and the sort of general feeling of bonhomie and benevolence that it has engendered in almost all of us. Well, certainly everybody who got in touch with the programme today, including Scottish people and Italian people, which I think added to the thesis we were exploring at 10 o'clock, that something about this lot, this team, this squad feels very different. But, and thank you to Holly for reminding me, the third thing on that list, there's always someone that's going to rain on any parade, and England fans being investigated by UEFA for three different things, the third being the fireworks that were set off, the laser pointed at the Danish goalkeeper and the booing of the national anthem. But we put all that sadness behind us.
Mystery Hour on LBC with James O'Brien.
And focus instead. That was new. Crikey, I like that. Took me by surprise. Goodness knows what it did to you. And focus instead upon the mysteries that you need solving. The way this works, if you're new to the feature, is that you have something bubbling away in the back of your brain that is best described as a mystery. A who, a why, a what, a where, a when, a whither. Even the occasional wherefore. Something to which you need an answer. And crucially, there has to be an answer. Or at least you have to honestly think that there must be an answer. And you ring in with the question. Somebody else listening hopefully has the answer. And magic occurs. Marriages made in heaven, question and answer type marriages unfold magically before our very ears. If you are supremely well qualified for providing the answer that you provided, i.e., if we can't quite believe our luck that you were listening, a question came in about something you invented or something that you have a particular affinity for or experience of, you may achieve the highest accolade that British radio, well, I keep saying British radio, I think international radio, I think the highest accolade that radio anywhere in the world can bestow is probably the Railiota. And if we're satisfied otherwise with your qualifications, you get a highly prized Mystery Hour round of applause. So 03456060973 is the number that you need. And I think we'll just crack on and you can work out how it works as we go along. So we will begin with Amy, who's in Bridgewater in Somerset. Amy, question or answer?
Question.
Carry on.
Why aren't dogs ticklish? Or indeed cats, I suppose. I have one of each and I've tried on both of them and I know they can't laugh, but
well,
isn't why aren't they ticklish?
How do you know they're not ticklish if they can't laugh?
Well, because they don't squirm and buckle and all that kind of stuff that we do when we're tickled.
Did you shave them before you tickled them?
Shave?
No.
They haven't got thick fur.
No, but they've got fur.
The dog hasn't.
How ticklish? Yeah. How ticklish would you be if you had a healthy pelt?
Well, to be fair, my dog's just been groomed, so her hair is really, really short.
Yeah, but it's not shaved short. It's not as short as yours, is it? I mean, I don't want to get ungallant or indiscreet, but your body hair is considerably shorter than your dog's, even post-grooming, right?
Yeah, right, OK.
So I don't know. I wonder whether...
I don't think that's the answer.
Well, I'm not sure it is either, but it's a theory.
Yeah, granted, and it's a good theory.
Thank you.
But my dog hair is very short and curly, and I can get to her skin, and the principle of...
But is the question not why are
you... The tickle's not...
Yeah, go on.
On the skin, it's under the skin.
It can be. Well, there's two types, you know, there's the sort of...
Well, yeah.
There's the feather on the balls of your feet type tickling, and then there's the rib tickling, isn't there? They're two very different things. They like it, Amy, they like it. I mean, they like being... what you could call it tickling, or you could call it cuddling, or giving them a good little rummage, don't they? They like it. Dogs do, anyway.
Well, my dog doesn't like. When I stroke her and she rolls over and I stroke her tummy,
exactly.
And all that stuff.
But so she's getting a frisson. She's getting a pleasure out of it. It's just different from the pleasure that we might get out of tickling.
But she doesn't flinch when she's led there asleep. If I just suddenly start tickling her under her armpit, she doesn't flinch.
I think we may have accidentally here, Amy, struggled or stumbled into what the great philosopher A.J. Eyre would have described as a category error. Because I think the question would be, why are humans ticklish? Because I can't think of any other animals that are. Can you?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
I mean, you might as well have said, why are monkeys ticklish? Do
all
we know?
Animals. Yeah, well, I don't know.
That's I don't know either.
I can only vouch for a dog and a cat because that's all I've... Well, I've got chickens, but I haven't tried to tickle them.
Why not?
Good question.
Well, I expect a slightly higher degree of research to be undertaken by contributors before they ring into Mystery Hour. I mean, if you'd ever tickled a chicken and you'd got a result, that could have turned the entire question upside down, couldn't it?
Yeah,
and given
right,
I mean, how would you know? So here's the key question. You're going for squirming. How would you know whether any mammal... Because I think, you know, life's too short to include fish in this, or amphibians. How would you know whether a mammal was actually ticklish? Because none of them can laugh, except perhaps hyenas, but that doesn't count. So you're going for squirming.
Sort of squirming and you know how we kind of, if you tickle somebody, you sort of...
Yeah.
You know, that
no,
sort
I do.
Of
I do.
Movement.
I do. I do. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, because they're going to squirm anyway, because they're going to try and... Especially a cat. A cat is going to squirm if you tickle it, but because it hates what you're doing to it, not because it's actually... I'm just worrying about the parameters under which we'll be able to provide a definitive answer, but I like the question.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Can I also just say,
what?
Eric's Fish Bar, you're right.
Oh, you went, did you?
I went. And you're right.
You're a long way from home. Why did I go to North Norfolk all the way from Somerset? That's a journey.
In half term. Oh, took the kids over.
Lovely.
Yeah, and I made a point of visiting it, and it was wonderful.
Well, I'm very glad my recommendation. I get more thanks for recommending fish and chips and books, except my own, than I do, I think, for anything else on the programme. So, Eric's, if you find yourself in North Norfolk ever, they still use beef dripping. They've got a vegetarian fat fryer as well, but it is absolutely fish and chips like you used to have as a child. I'm glad that my recommendation landed so well with you, Amy, and I'll try and get you an answer to your question once we've clarified exactly what it is. Why are humans ticklish and no other animals are? Or why are some animals ticklish? Or why aren't dogs ticklish? Come at that from whatever angle you please. Philip is in Sandhurst. Philip, question or answer?
I've got a question, James.
Carry on, Philip.
My question, James, is
Do you want to put your teeth in? Put your teeth in and start again. Well done.
Who or what is Larry, and what did he have to be so happy about?
I know this, but only because it's come up many, many times in the past as a Mystery Hour question, which is, no, that's absolutely fine. I'm going to remember half of it and not the other half. The answer number one is a boxer called Larry who won. And so it appeared in a headline and then it got picked up. It's definitely from Australia or New Zealand. And it got picked up in the papers and became a figure of speech slowly by, osmosis. And then verbal osmosis. And then the other one, I think a suggestion is the, larrikin. Larrikin? Larrikin?
No.
You've not heard that? It's like a word for a geezer, a bit of a geezer, you know, a little bit ish, little bit R. He's a bit of a cheeky larrikin, which, again, is Australian or New Zealand, but I think we took it there. I think it came out of somewhere in England. So nobody knows for sure. This is a definitive answer, by the way.
Oh, I'm a bit crushed now, though.
Why?
If your researchers had done their job, they wouldn't have put me through with that question. I had another brilliant one
That's absolutely outrageous suggestion. The researchers aren't allowed to start answering questions. It's my...
But they could have said, we've had that before, mate. Clear off.
I think the people answering the phones today have only done about 3 mystery hours between them, Philip. So, frankly, it's you that should have realised. How many mystery hours have you listened to?
I only listen when I can.
No, that's not what I asked. Roughly, how many mystery hours have you listened to?
Dozens. But
then it's your fault. Don't you start on my staff, mate.
I had pylons last time, and that got 3 answers.
That was a good question. So you're a regular, and now you're slagging off my staff. It was still quite wet behind the ears, and I'm just trying to engender a bit like Gareth Southgate. I'm putting my arm around my production staff, and I'm saying to you, Philip, no, mate, you leave him alone. You've listened to dozens of mystery hours. You should have realised that this question had been answered before.
I'm sorry, but James, but saying that they're wet behind the ears isn't very nice.
Yes, it is. It's just a figure of speech to describe people who are relatively green, relatively new, a bit like, you know...
you're just beating down their ambition.
I'm here to build them up, like Gareth Southgate and Bukayo Saka. That's the most obvious parallel I can draw by giving people an early chance. So, Philip, guess what, mate? I get a round of applause. There we go. Go me. Kathy's in Ilford. Kathy, question or answer?
It's a question. Hi, James.
Hello, Kathy.
Hi, I'm just wondering why when you buy trousers and jackets that the pockets are sewn up, and sometimes you don't even realise. You get a nice surprise after 2 years old, there's a pocket in this jacket, but it's sewn up at the top.
Oh, I know this. And remember, you have to ask me what my qualifications are when I've answered it. This hasn't happened for a long time. 2 out of 2 before quarter past. So, the answer is that if the pocket wasn't sewn up, then the lining, the pocket lining, could get creased. And when you ironed the suit jacket, it would look creased on the outside. So it's just so that when it's hanging on the hanger in the shop, it looks absolutely smooth, the pocket.
Right. Thank you so much.
Otherwise, when they pressed it with an unsewned, I've just invented a great word there. When they pressed it with an unsewn pocket, then the likelihood of creasing would be considerably higher. And it wouldn't look as smart on the hanger or indeed the mannequin.
Thank you so much.
No. You haven't asked me what my qualifications are.
What are your qualifications?
Well, Kathy, I spent several years as a menswear consultant at Aquascutum number 100 Regent Street.
Fantastic.
It is, isn't it? I know quite a lot about menswear, and amazingly, I can remember it. I could probably remember more menswear-related issues than I can journalism-related issues. Make of that what you will. So that would be another round of applause for me. Better start getting some questions I can't answer, otherwise I think my smugness might start turning people off, and that would be awful. 12:15 is the time.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. This is LBC.
12:18 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC, where Mystery Hour is underway. Ticklish animals. That's the only question left on the board, because I've been rather arrogantly answering the others. I shall try to resist the urge now that I've got two rounds of applause in my back pocket. But we need to clarify what the question is. Are humans the only ticklish mammal? Why aren't dogs ticklish? I don't know. I think we've got an answer on the way. Remember, if you're struggling to get through, don't waste your time texting me to tell me how hard it is. Just wait until I say goodbye to a caller and then jump quickly, if you can, to grab that. Or make like you're playing Daley Thompson's Decathlon on a ZX Spectrum in approximately 1984 and just keep hitting redial like it's going out of fashion in the hope of finally getting a line into the studio. Cecilia is in Muswell Hill. Cecilia, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on, Cecilia.
About ticklish animals.
Oh, yes.
Humans are ticklish and laugh when they're stimulated, but rats do as well in exactly the same way. However, they laugh at a different frequency, usually detectable by a bat detector. So if you've got a device that can pick up on the high frequency of the chuckling, because that's what it will admit is chuckling. In contrast, if you've got a monkey, you can tickle it, but it will enjoy the tickling in the same way a dog will, in that it'll respond and snuggle next to
it. So it has it has a nice, shivery, pleasant feeling, but it doesn't. Yes. It's not going to laugh. And crikey.
So yeah, well, monkeys will laugh in mimicry of the other animals around them.
Okay.
So it's a language function rather than a
reflex.
Stimulus. Yeah. Right, reflex, yes.
That's incredible. How much personal experience do you have of tickling monkeys?
Well, not monkeys. I'm tickling a golden retriever at the moment called Olive. And if I move my hand, she makes my hand go back.
Because they do love it. And it is technically tickling. But I think that the question was looking for laughter, to which the answer would be rats. But you need to have a special machine, the machine that lets you hear bats.
It's not a special machine, it's only a bat detector. You can get one off the internet.
Yeah, no, Cecilia.
If you want to go around.
Excusez-moi, a bat detector is a special machine. A non-special machine would be something like a fridge. A special machine is something that we are unlikely to have. I didn't mean that you have to go to NASA to get it. I just meant you're unlikely to have it at home. So a bat detector is a special machine.
Mm.
And that would let you hear rats laugh.
Yes.
What sort of noise do they make then?
Laughter. It's very audible. It's exactly laughter.
And do we know why dogs?
They love it.
Dogs. Well, I suppose if a dog, I think Rita in Harrow has suggested this. If a dog was in the wild, pre-domestication, perhaps pacing through, stalking through the savannah, Cecilia, with little grasses tickling his undercarriage, and he started laughing, he'd never eat.
It's Yes, that's pleasure, isn't it? That's pleasure-seeking. Yes. But then I guess a dog would get pleasure also from eating or any of those sort
but
of
things. I bet there's an evolutionary
habits.
Device which doesn't apply to rats because their prey wouldn't be able to hear them laughing.
And it would be weakness, I guess, in a rat. If you're tickling, yes. It's you're rendering them...
less alert.
Less alert, yeah.
I love it. Qualifications?
I'm a psycholinguist.
But that's humans.
Yes, but it's still reaction, and linguist isn't necessarily speaking. That's word production. That's it. Linguistics is a vast, vast subject.
You're telling me.
So it's more stimulus and where the reactions are stored and whether there's a reflexology.
So it's not, I mean, language in the conventional sense. Linguistics would include laughter and other kind of...
Coughing, pausing, communication. When you're doing public addresses, everything, yeah.
Beautifully done. Round of applause for Cecilia, please.
Ooh!
That was lovely. well played. Great stuff. I love that. If you are going to tickle rats, do be careful. If you're just tuning into this programme, no, I'm not going to provide any context to that public service announcement. Roger is in Orpington. Roger, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on, Roger.
Well, it's a bit weird. You know, like you get a power surge at half-time with a football?
I do.
I was wondering, obviously people go to the toilet as well. So do like the reservoirs drop as well?
Flipping it. No, well, I thought you were asking about filling the kettle, not emptying your bladder.
Well, you put a lot less water in the kettle than you would do down the toilet,
don't you? You mean so many people flush the lavatory that... No, I don't see how it could. What do I know? But because the water supply is not... it's a good question. I can't. Why am I trying to answer it? I've already done my bit on this one, I think. All right. I'll leave it on the board. If everyone flushes their toilet at the same time is the question, really, just to bring half time in it. For people who don't understand, there's a power surge because everyone turns the kettle on, or they used to do. You get the same thing at the end of a massive episode of EastEnders. 27 million, by the way, for the footy last night. That's Morecambe and Wise Christmas special numbers, isn't it? So if even a significant percentage of them turned on the kettle at half time, then you get a power surge. What you're asking, Roger, basically, is there a lavatorial equivalent?
Yeah, I suppose so. One area empties and the other area fills up.
Well, we shall see. We shall find out. 0345 606 0973 is the number that you need if you can answer that question. To Frankfurt Nest, where Vieri, a.k.a. Dr. Dog, is on the line, which makes me suspect that there's a steward's inquiry on the way because there's nothing else animal-related except the question that Cecilia just answered. Vieri, what made you pick up the phone?
Oh, hi, James. No, it's not a steward's inquiry. I just wanted to add something to this. There are actually two types of ticklishness. And it's not just a question of having fun and enjoying it. Some ticklish behavior makes you cringe. Yes. If you think of a feather running along the sole of your foot, you're going to hate that. Yes. Most people will.
Yes.
And it's very individual. So a ticklish reaction is not necessarily linguistic. It's a reflex. And it's neurological. And in any case, I mean, lots of animals are ticklish. I've met dogs who've been ticklish.
How do they manifest? How do they react? How do you know they're ticklish, if you see what I mean?
Well, they're ticklish because then they react. If you touch the side of a dog where, you know, a little bug or something might bite the dog, then the dog will scratch it. And you can reproduce that reflex just by scratching that point. So some animals, some dogs will react when you sort of tickle their sides and scratch themselves, although there's nothing there to scratch. Except your hand.
Yeah.
And some dogs will widen their paws, especially when you start, you know, tickling them in between their paws. Cats do that as well. And some dogs will really hate it. So watch out who you do it to and which dog you do it to.
Well, do you know, Gary's just been in touch to say that he tried to tickle his client's dog and it nipped him. So there is living proof of what you...
Well,
what,
that
what,
wasn't a very good idea.
Well, you don't know that. You should always check with the owner, shouldn't you, about how the dog responds. Do any animals laugh? We know that rats do, because Cecilia's answer was...
Well, rats don't laugh. What they do is they emit a noise that actually is really quite interesting. And I only know this because I wrote an article about this years ago, so I kind of remember this. Mm. But there was science in scientists in the 1990s, I think at some point, decided to see why rats were making such awful noises. very high-pitched noises when they were about to meet other rats and play. So they knew they were going to predict, oh, I'm going to play with another rat. This is great. Oh, I'm making this screechy noise.
Uh-huh.
And they were making this noise also in other situations when they induced a very light current under their feet through a sort of type Skinner-type box. And that made them itch, as it were, and scratch and screech.
And what is, so, finally, the difference? Because dogs love scratching, so do humans. Presumably all mammals like a good scratch, pretty much. Like, whether they've got an irritant on their skin or not, sometimes a good scratch is I don't want to get carried away, but it's heavenly.
That's the thing of the scratching. Yeah, that's the thing of scratching the ear. You know, when you say you're sort of scratching the ear of your dog and he leans into you, it's just because he likes it. That's not tickling. That's just, he loves the grooming of the ear, which is a place where he doesn't really get to. He gets to his ear with his hind paws, but it's usually a very hard and very brutal scratch that they give themselves, whilst we have, you have five fingers or four fingers and a thumb, and it's much more, like a massage type of of thing, and they love it. So it's just a mutual exchange of dopamine. A
round of applause for Vieri. Great work as ever from Dr. Dog. You can find out more about the work he does in animal behaviourism and attendant issues by looking up his website. 27 minutes after, did I tell you about scratching and therapy and my fingernails? Have I told you that story? I must share that story with you, but we went quite full on therapy yesterday, so I'll hold off, I think, until tomorrow, if you remind me. It's quite weird, actually, genuinely weird. If you're a nail biter, then you may be interested to hear it. Of course you may not. 28 after 12, Mitch is in Mansfield. Mitch, question or answer?
Answer, James.
Carry on, Mitch.
The reservoirs do drop during half time.
No.
Well,
so we've
just planned a shutdown on a reservoir for Severn Trent, and they had to cancel it because of the demand during the England game.
Really?
Yeah.
So you're in the industry, obviously, and so you were going to be doing some maintenance work on it or something like that?
Yeah, pipe work replacements, but they couldn't stop the flows because demand was so high because of the England game.
You couldn't see it go down, could you?
Not visually. You could see it on computer readouts.
Really?
And the level sensors, yeah.
And that's because everyone flushes the toilet at roughly the same time, the same sort of 10-minute window, and it impacts on
the toilet. Yeah, and then at the end of game, people taking showers as well.
Oh, I love that. Who has a shower at the end of the game apart from the players? Actually, some of the lads in Trafalgar Square had a lot of beer to wash off them, so they'd be straight in the shower when they got back to the hotel. Qualifications, you've kind of told us, but just put it formally.
Yeah, project manager, water industry.
Oh, sweet as a nut, mate. Have a round of applause. Oh, I love that. And I bet you Roger loves that as well. I wasn't expecting to get that as an answer. That is a thing of beauty. And that's why we do Mystery Hour every week. It's coming up to 12:30. You are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. Remember, as I bid farewell to Mitch, it could free up a phone line for you. Questions still in need of answers. I don't know if we've got any, have we? Are we completely? I think we're more or less up to date, so we'll get some more questions on the board shortly. After, Tim Humphrey brings you the very latest news headlines.
At the Bank of Antandek, mortgages are on the menu.
I was in the chippy last night and it hit me.
Go on.
We should give all our new mortgage customers £1,000 of spuds.
Potatoes?
Yeah, jackets, roasties, dolphin wires. I mean, what's not to love?
Hey, yeah, we could call it
mashback. Genius.
Meanwhile, at Santander, they're giving their customers £1,000 cash back on selected first-time buyer mortgages. See what's possible at Santander.
Lending subject to status and criteria. Cashback given on completion and repayable if mortgage closed within 2 years. Offer can be withdrawn. Your home may be repossessed if you do not keep up repayments on your mortgage.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
12:33 is the time. Do you remember yesterday when we thought we'd found the most bonkers Brexit story so far? And it was a Daily Express headline that said something like, "Take that, EU! Haulier finds loophole to stick it to Johnny Foreigner." It didn't quite say Johnny Foreigner. And then you read the article and it turned out that a haulier had opened a £3.5 million facility in the Netherlands and started training all of his drivers in Ireland so that they'd be fully qualified to drive around the European Union. And the Daily Express tried to cast this as a I mean, genuinely hilarious. To be fair to poor soul that has to write these stories, the story didn't really tally up to the headline. The headline was nuts, but I mean, such is the nature of tabloid manipulations. I can't believe it, but 24 hours later, I think we found one that's even more bonkers. I think we may be just introducing a new feature to the programme, because it can't get any more bonkers than this, can it? Here is the headline in the Daily Express, or at least on their website. EU plot to take British citizens is severe threat. Boris Johnson warned, it's serious. And you think, especially as a parent, you think, what? The EU is trying to steal British citizens? What are they doing? Kidnapping us? Abducting us? What can it be? And then you read the article, and perhaps inevitably, if it's not Andrew Bridgen, it's Bernard Jenkin, explained that the UK used to export talent across the European Union and is now, quotes, severely threatened. He questioned Boris Johnson if he was able to speak to Angela Merkel about visas for musicians and artists in Europe. Speaking to the liaison committee, Mr. Jenkin said, I think I would have liked the chance to ask Chancellor Merkel, who wants to stop cultural exchange, which is one of the objectives of her visit. And the accusation is that British people are going to start taking residence in other European countries and assuming European citizenship because they can't do their careers by staying in London. So that's the damned EU making, let me check my notes, making British musicians welcome in order to continue pursuing their careers after people like Bernard Jenkin brought about a Brexit that prevents them from doing so while only having British citizenship. Crikey. If we get a better headline than that this week, I shall give you the money myself. Two phone lines free if you're quick. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. Oddly, I like this, and it gives me the opportunity to give you a quick heads up on something. Talking about the football earlier, and someone texted in, so I was listening to Joe Lycett this morning, and he was speaking about inclusivity and how he'd never felt football spoke to him as a young man. And Jordan Henderson tweeted something last night which really made him feel this team was revolutionary. And I should tell you, Joe, I'm talking to Joe later. He's a guest on a forthcoming episode of Full Disclosure, my podcast, which is back after a brief hiatus tomorrow with Mary Portas, the erstwhile Queen of Shops, who you've also mentioned in the context of me waxing lyrical about my days as a menswear consultant as well. So I love it when the planets align like that. So they're both on the agenda. I think probably Joe will be next week and Mary will be tomorrow's episode. So don't forget to subscribe to Full Disclosure at your first opportunity, because we're going to be back up and running tomorrow. Mystery Hour, of course, never goes away. And on we go. Johnny's in Manchester. Johnny, question or answer?
Hello, I have a question for you.
Carry on, Johnny.
I'm wondering about grammatical gender. You know how in French you get sort of masculine nouns and feminine nouns, and yeah, in German you get sort of neuter nouns as well. I can't for the life of me work out what that's for.
No, what a great question.
Yeah, all it seems to do is just make everything more complicated.
And harder for foreign people to learn and speak as well, which I'm sure isn't the intention.
Yeah. But as far as I can tell, it doesn't really impart any extra information, you know. So I'm just really...
Why do some languages have gender?
Yeah, and how did that develop in the first place? Because it seems like
le and la.
If you're going to have something that makes everything more complicated, there must be a reason for it.
Do you know?
And English seems to be have it.
I mentioned earlier this week, we were talking about tipping, I think, on Tuesday, and I mentioned my glory days as a waiter at the Brasserie restaurant in Kidderminster. Johnny, I don't know if you were listening, but when I started there, one of the first things I did, and in retrospect, this was probably a bit undiplomatic of me, because the restaurant hadn't been open that long, and it was the poshest restaurant Kidderminster had ever seen. And they'd called it Le Brasserie, because that lovely bloke that ran it and opened it, he was about as French as Dick Van Dyke. But and he'd had all the stuff printed, and I think I may have had a Batham's too many after closing one night when we all used to sit around, and I told the owner's son that the gender was wrong on the name of the entire restaurant. But what, I mean, that proves your point, doesn't it? Why not just have one word for the? How can a restaurant be masculine or feminine? How can a toilet be masculine? I mean, everything has got a le or a la in French, and like you.
German has three, so...
Because it has the it as well. I don't have any German at all, so I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think a couple of Northern European languages are like that as well. I believe Icelandic and a couple of the Nordic languages also have three, but
why?
I just...
No, I love it. That's a great question. I've given up saying I can't believe we've never had that before, because we've been doing Mystery Hour for so long and I'm getting so old and dodgy that it's perfectly possible we have and I've just completely forgotten. But if we haven't, why have we never done that before? And if we have, I can't wait to be reminded of the answer. 0345 6060 973 is the number that you need. China is in Blackpool. China, question or answer?
Question, please.
Carry on.
I want to know what the line is between, like, a murder and an assassination.
I think...
You know, how important somebody has to be for it to be an assassination.
How important they have to be.
Yeah. Like,
I think that you've answered the question unintentionally by dint of an assassination is when somebody is killed because of their status or their role, as opposed to who they are or even what they are. So a politician would be assassinated by a terrorist but murdered by their husband or wife. Do you see what I mean? So if someone is getting killed because of what they do, their status or their role, then it's an assassination. But if the same person were to be killed by their partner in a domestic incident, that would be a murder.
Okay, but say, like,
yeah,
say it wasn't a politician. Say it was, like, some form of, like, celebrity
yes.
that was killed. Like, what kind of height of, like, celebrityism?
Well, I don't think there is a height of celebrityism, although congratulations on inventing a word. We're always we're big fans of neologisms on this programme. It would, again, perhaps be someone that was not personally known to the killer.
Okay.
And the killer was motivated by the status, identity or role of the victim. So even a relatively unknown celebrity, someone very low on the celebrityism scale, if they were being killed by somebody who, for example, had a grudge against a certain reality television programme, I think technically that would still be an assassination if they had no previous connection to each other and the killer just had a real problem with a certain reality television programme. I think so. I'm going to leave it on the board. And, of course, the answer is everybody who was assassinated was also murdered. But not everybody who was murdered was also assassinated. I'm going to leave it on the board, but I think that is... Why do you want to know, China? What have you got planned?
I'm not at liberty to discuss that, James.
No, that's perfectly reasonable. Just so you know, my status on the celebrityism scale is absolutely non-existent, all right? So it wouldn't count.
You're all right. I'm not coming for you.
No, thank God for that. I just thought I'd check. 12:42 is the time. That's the difference, is that? I mean, I don't think there's a hard and fast rule for it. And if there was, where on earth would you find it? But if you can add to what I've already said, let me know. And if you can't, I'll take my third round of applause before closing time. Not just yet, before closing time today. It's just coming up to 12:43. Nick's in Peckham. Nick, question or answer?
It's a question, actually. It's a kind of another languages question.
I like languages questions. Although we had a psycholinguist on earlier, and she's already had her 5 minutes, 15 minutes of fame. So hopefully there'll be someone else listening.
It's a mystery hour of languages,
isn't it?
Okay, so I would like to know that going back to when we evolved into speaking language.
Yeah.
How did the various continents derive to whatever language they spoke? So for argument's sake, i.e. why didn't all the continents speak Japanese or French or English or so on? What made the different continents people speak the different languages?
It's a really good question, that. And it's made even more complicated, isn't it, by the fact that we all come from a common root.
Yeah.
But I think the great exodus from Africa, which is the... What are you making that noise for?
You're not going to get another round of applause, are you?
Come on. It depends. You're the judge, all right? This is one of my all-time favourite subjects. This and accents absolutely fascinate me. So when the great exodus or the diaspora began from Africa, from which all human life is descended, that would be pre-language, right?
Right.
So okay. Then you've got human communities growing up in all different parts of the world, as you've just identified. But that would be before language. Humans started living together before anything had evolved into what we would recognise today as a language. So what you've got is simultaneously languages developing in all different parts of the planet. There's no absolute reason whatsoever to expect all of those languages to evolve in the same way. So say that you're in Ulaanbaatar and I'm in Kidderminster, and we are the first people in our little tribes to develop the very rudiments of language, and you point at a stone and say, I don't know, freck, and I point at a stone and say stone, that's how it happens.
Okay, so how did you get the accents then?
No, you can't do that, Nick. I can't. It's not going into. I mean, there's a million there's a million different reasons why accents develop. A lot to do with the air that you breathe, and heavily industrial areas like the Black Country. They all talk like this because their noses have been so blocked by all the pollution. For example, there's all sorts of. If you hold your nose and try and do a New York, if you hold your nose and try and do an Irish accent, it comes out quite New York sometimes. So that's a different field of expertise. This is what I'm going to do my PhD in when I finally hang up my headphones. But the answer to your original question is that language evolved in human communities, but the human communities were so spread out that it evolved in completely different ways.
I can't believe you're going to get another round of applause.
Yeah, but the question is, Nicholas, do I deserve it?
Well, I think there's still grey areas,
oh,
I've got to be
cheeky
honest.
Beggar. Are you serious? Come off it. That's an answer. That's an answer of absolute beauty.
Well, but what's your credentials then?
Yeah, it's a good question.
Yeah, I think I got you there.
I think you might have done. Oh, damn you. Damn your eyes. Okay, leave it on the board. Ah, I can't believe. What's the point of making up the rules as I go along if I can't give myself rounds of applause willy-nilly? I'll leave that on the board, but if I'm right, I'm having it. 12:46 is the time.
Mystery Hour with James O'Brien. Call 0345 6060973.
12:49 is the time. You're listening to James O'Brien on LBC. What's the difference between an assassination and a murder? What is the criteria of celebrityism in order to qualify as an assassination? It's a grim subject matter, but, if we don't provide specific examples or go into detail, then we can have the conversation, I think, in quite a light-hearted fashion. How did different languages develop? Why don't we all speak the same language? 0345 6060973. And staying with languages, why do some of them assign gender to everything? Most obviously French, because most of us would have done it, if not all of us would have done it at school. So how can a toilet be feminine? La toilette. It is la toilette, isn't it? And what's a le? A book. A book is masculine, and a toilet is feminine. What's that all about, eh? Eh? 0345 6060973. I can't remember any others. I think we've answered most of them. I've got those three still on the board. Any others? Just remind me. Ian is in Epping. Ian, question or answer?
It's a question, James.
Carry on.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's about the football last night. They say 27 million people watched the football.
17 million.
Well, 17 million. Yeah. I heard 27 in another station.
Oh, yeah, sorry. It is 27. It's 27. God, you can't trust a word I say. My apologies. 27 million. Also, why were you listening to another station? I've been on since 10 o'clock. Do you think I do this for my own entertainment, Ian?
I do apologise.
Carry on. That's all right. I need a letter off your mum by break time.
Right. In 1966, they say half the country watched the final. My question is, how accurate are they if we saw footage of thousands of people watching in clubs and pubs last night?
Yes.
So how sure are they that it was 27 million people watching?
Ah, well, it's a good question.
I think you've answered this before.
I don't know if I have with specific examples to several people watching the same screen. So, A, it's not scientific. All of these ratings are done in the same way that opinion polls are done. They ask a relatively small number of people. In this case, you have a box in your house, or you certainly used to, a barb box in your house. And then they'd multiply that by the population. So they put research into trying to get as representative a sample as possible in the same way that opinion pollsters do. And then they times it by whatever the factor that would provide the entire population. So they find out what percentage of the population is watching the telly, and therefore they can turn the percentage into a number. So the short answer to the bit about massive audiences watching the same screen is that I don't actually know. But would it be a significant enough number in the context of 27 million?
I think it would.
Yeah, probably.
If they're counting the number of boxes watching, there's families, loads of families watching.
Yeah.
So
But they'll know that. They'll know how many people were watching the box in, if you've got a barb box. They'll know how many people were watching the telly at that time. They'll know how many people are in the house, how many of the families. I don't know whether they've got a thing to say. Actually, we had Auntie Doris round last night as well, so there were 12 of us watching EastEnders. So, that is the bottom line answer. But the specific side answer, side question of what about if there's 500 people watching it in the Dog and Duck, how does that feed into the overall statistics? The short answer is I don't know, mate. So hopefully someone, you've left it late, but hopefully hopefully someone listening will be able to provide us with an answer.
You've given me an answer I'm happy with, and you're on a roll today, Ian.
I'm not taking a round of applause for that. You're very kind. I'm not greedy, and I, you know me, and I hate showing off. So, I mean, you're very generous, but hopefully someone will be able to tell us how you do that pub screen in the context of the barb boxes. And thank you for your kind words. If you know the answer, you know what to do. Mark's in Cumbria. Mark, question or answer?
Answer about these linguistic matters.
Go on. Well, you can only do one, so whichever one you've cleared with the producer.
Ooh, I suppose about grammatical gender.
Yes.
It's one of the features of human language, which some families of languages don't have at all. Finnish doesn't have it, for example.
Nor do we,
but
do we?
We don't anymore.
Right.
But some languages, families, where it does exist, it seems to go a long way back, and it relates to cosmological and mythological beliefs about the world. So many peoples have believed that all the creatures and things and trees and rocks and whatever in the world have spirits which have gender.
Oh, wow.
Some are male, some are female. And this goes through, even in ancient Greek times, they were still talking in those terms.
Good grief.
And this will mean that anything will be assigned to a gender.
Yes.
There will often be, in the older languages, also a neuter gender for things which don't get assigned a specific male or female gender.
Oh, I see.
And you can see this still coming through. And in fact, in some languages, young living things which have not reached sexual maturity are assigned neuter gender. And this is why in German, for example, words for young women like das Mädchen is grammatically neuter.
Is that right?
Not feminine.
Well, I never...
And there are stupid jokes about this, like, that, where is the turnip? She is in the kitchen. Where is the maiden? It is at the opera. And things like that.
Oh, I see what you mean, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's Greek as well has that, that words for young human beings are neuter gender. But the details are specific to each group. So if you think about it, in French, the word for sun is male, le soleil, and the word for moon is la lune, feminine.
Oui, c'est.
But in German, it's the other way around.
Vraiment?
The moon is male and the sun is female.
Well, and that is because of their different mythological heritages.
And way back, I mean, we only have written language for the last 5,000 years.
Yes.
So we're not in a position to know the fine details. But this happens, and what seems to have happened is that as these beliefs faded away, and in Europe, that
I'm going to hurry. I'm going to hurry you, Mark. I'm going because I want to squeeze in a couple more answers, and I think you've already gone definitive.
The gender systems will get reduced.
Of course, they will. So, there you go. When I said I'm going to have to hurry you, I wasn't joking. Yeah. What are your remind me of your qualifications?
A professional linguist.
I know you are. You're one of my favourite contributors. Every time you come on, you knock it out of the park. Have another round of applause on me.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, no, you're very welcome. I sense you feel I cut you off in your prime, but I do want to squeeze in a couple more. Phil's in Whitney. Phil, what have you got?
I'm afraid it's a steward's inquiry.
Oh, well, make it brief, Phil, will you? Come on, man.
I will try to. It's the reservoir question.
Yes.
Reservoirs don't reduce their level when we all flush our toilets at the same time. What happens is the pressure in the cold water mains drop.
Well, hang on. The fact that he was literally about to start doing some pipework maintenance at a reservoir and they had to postpone it because of the football. Literally his job. Mitch, yes. In Mansfield.
Yeah, but do you think they postponed it because the water level was going to drop or because the football was on?
Because the water level was going to drop. What are your qualifications?
I've got a degree which includes thermodynamics and fluid dynamics, and I've been designing cold water systems for 43 years.
Well, it's not exactly rocket science, is it?
Never was.
No, I'm only joking. I think you're both right. Is that okay?
Yep, that'll do for me.
Go give Phil a quick round of applause. Barney's in Telford. Barney, what have you got?
Hello, James. Nice to speak to you again.
Likewise.
Little bit of an origin of language kind of answer.
Hang on, you sound like you're settling down. It sounds like you've lit a pipe and settled down in an armchair. Sheila Fogarty's already here. Give me the short version.
Okay. First word, the theory is the first words that were ever spoken was agua.
Yes.
It's the water you know, people telling each other where water was, because otherwise they'd
right,
die.
I mean, was I right or not? Is it all about the fact that language would have evolved differently and all over the world, which is why we ended up speaking different languages?
It's contextual, so yeah, it would depend on where you are.
Round of applause for me and Barney. Great work, Barney. Thank you very much. Kelly's in Wellington. Kelly, last word. What's it going to be? Question or answer?
It's an answer, James.
Make it snappy.
So my husband works in TV. He's a brand and marketing manager. So he, part of his job is to track the success of shows. And I just asked him the answer to it of how they track people. And he basically says some people have what they call radar boxes on their TVs, which tracks their habits, etc. So it's not an accurate figure. They don't track them in
bars. Did you ask him about pubs?
Yes, I did ask him about
what
pubs.
What did he say?
Pubs don't. He says pubs don't have them because obviously their viewing figures would be all out of whack because sometimes they'd be closed. And
so the overall numbers are independent of people watching it together in the pub?
Yeah, basically they make an average. They've got
people
do. Sort of
that'll
social
do. Well played. Round of applause for Kelly. We've done the lot. We've cleared the board. I think we have. Murder and assassination. We didn't do that one, which means my answer was right. Round of applause for me. Thank you very much.